$30,000 a bit.
Jean Brown is in my church, works in housing, and she can tell you how terrible housing conditions are, and this is in San Francisco, which I sure is better than most large cities. The housing, it's terrible, and even the, I was going to ask, how many saw the documentary that Bill Moyers of CBS did on the Boston situation? Was it Boston or the Bronx? I think they burned something like 10,000 buildings in 1 year. Did you see that? I did not see it. Now, I'm really sad that I missed it because I had so much feedback from it. I understood that there are landlords who even burn their own buildings to get the insurance after they could no longer, no longer anybody would want to live in them. And this is, I mean, people would be living in there too when they burned it. And it's terrible how landlords, they raise the rent, they give eviction notices, and the ones who get evicted are just, a lot of times seniors. I saw it recently in San Francisco, they're going to evict, you want to raise the rent by 40% or something, and the people were on a fixed income, and they couldn't afford that, and so he is in the process of having them evicted, but fortunately some good people know about it, and we'll attempt to stop that, because it's just not right. Why do we put property rights over human rights? Where is our priorities? I think that people need to be concerned about these types of things. Senior citizens shouldn't have to worry about being adequately housed and adequately fed and living on such meager incomes when they've worked hard all their lives. I don't understand it. I really don't understand it. We're supposed to be a Christian nation, but yet I see so much suffering. So much suffering. Tom, why don't you talk? I think it would be very helpful for these people to know what you're doing. Sure, come down and start waiting here.
I don't have a lot to say that isn't... It isn't already said, unless
you're going to pass it around to some people.
Would you please?
Thank you.
Then has a stake in what is going on in their own community. Okay, that's one thing. The other thing is, there is no way to get from 44th Street, where our church is, 1 mile down to the Fruit Ridge Center, where all of the services that our people need are available. That means the senior citizens and productive people and youth cannot get from the Pocket area to the Fruit Ridge Center, which is the service center where all of the businesses and shops and boutiques and shoe shops and the post office, they can't get there. There's no way. No way. We're going to address that problem on Tuesday evening. We're going to say, hey, there's no way. And we're inviting in the merchants who have a stake in where those people's dollars go. You know? And why hasn't it happened before now? Well, it hasn't. Okay? But they're going to be called together. We're going to talk about that. We think it's a quickie, winnable kind of a community organizational project. Now, some other things will be coming up. Our housing project will come up. There is not in our area a library satisfactory to meet the needs of the people. Why? Well, there's 30 years of neglect in the Pocket area. And the other evening, the board of directors of the Neighborhood Center invited in the city county librarian. He came very open, said the reason we don't have a good library is nobody's asked for it.
Is that why it's the Pocket area? Because it's showing there?
Well, it's the county. It's an unincorporated part of the county that's surrounded by the city.
That's what I mean.
Yes, that's why it's called a pocket. But you can go from the city to the county and you can tell that you've gone from one environment into another. Mm-hmm. So next Tuesday we're going to address those two means that are on there, plus the library, then $150,000 is for street lights, you know, turn on the lights so that senior citizens are not frightened to look out their doors in the evening. That's another kind of project that's coming along. Yeah, I see. Ray?
Why is it that that's the case, since I'm well aware that there are similar cases in every city in Northern California? Why is it those people don't get into the city?
Why don't the county people get into the city? I'm listening to find out why they don't. I think it's an economic kind of problem.
This is one of the major problems. I think there's a big battle going on in the city of Willis, and it's a long time back. There's a group of people who want sewerage, and streets, and police protection. They don't want the city. They don't want to pay the tax. And these are not poor people. I mean, they're not real, what I call poor people. Some people are poor. These are people. $10,000. The city of Chico has got more pockets than Carter's got in Liverpool. And they've had them since I was a boy, 10 years old in the city. That's a long time ago.
Well, I'd invite the Chico Church to address its constituency.
I'm just saying, these things go on, and I'm saying this is bad. Now, in Oroville, we're doing something about it, too.
So,
we're sick and tired of this stuff that a few men or women with a little money who are renting places in those areas are keeping the rest of the community from having sidewalks and streets and lights and gutters and sanitation. Not fire spas, not the telephone, and the PG&E don't listen to them. You see, they put it in. But they wouldn't even have that if it was political action. Because they always raise the rent, and you're going to raise the taxes on some poor widow's home, or pump server to hire couples of. They don't own those homes.
Mm-hmm.
It's the money men in your community that don't own. And I dare say, I don't know anymore, because I haven't been in Sacramento for a long time. But I'll bet I could have told you 15 years ago exactly who owns the pocket. Mm-hmm. And that's why it isn't there, brother. I'll tell you. Mm-hmm. Right off. I lived there too long. I graduated from Sacramento Junior College, and I served the church in Sacramento. I served one of the Fulton. I served one of the Spurs. If you want to really go after it, get yourself a committee to go over the tax rolls. Find out who owns your pocket. And I've got $1,000 that if you win it, you can have it. I'll bet you that.
Well, give me the
dollars.
I may need that thousand. So what's the what do we got to do to get it?
You're going to get the $1,000 and then you can prove to me that it's not owned at least 40% of it, and that we're voting 90%. 40% of us are money people who don't live anywhere near that pocket.
Well, there is that. The dynamics is there, Ray.
You want to get your own credit?
Well, not on the basis level of knowledge. But let me say this, that our first struggle was with the politicians for this reason, that they would use the statistics of the Fort Ridge pocket area to get block grant revenue sharing funds to come to Sacramento County. Number one, many of those people have already been paying for services they were not getting because the capital development was not there. Secondly, their poverty would be sent to Washington as an appeal for their percentage of those kinds of funds to come. They would hit downtown and they'd spread out all over the county. The Housing and Redevelopment Agency of Sacramento County receives the money to do jobs where the need is. What happens? 7% of the money that came to the pocket area. It's demonstrated that 50% of the need is in the pocket area. Somebody is making some decisions for people's lives and they're not involved in it. So what we're trying to do is just to keep the process honest and open and keeping the pot stirred. Now, I your $1,000 may be good to us, and we may claim it.
Yeah, you can't claim it. You can't get it. Because the thing is, and you just you rung a bell and my little old man, what's little is left of, you know, I'm really decapitated out of it. I don't
believe that.
I'll listen to your
rhetoric.
What I'm trying to tell you, that this lights up a light with me because I've seen so much of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they do get the money has been going downtown. But you have to do something. What I'm trying to get at is, while you're doing what you're doing, which I'm going to say, amen and hallelujah, I'm starting to sit here, it's about where I can use it, while you're doing it, just get some of those senior citizens to go right down to that county park and find who owns the plot. And then you're going to find the plot.
Okay.
Yeah,
thank you for the insight.
But the rest of that story is that if it becomes incorporated into the city, the people who own the property will just raise the money on the people who are renting it anyway, so they're not going to pay it.
Well, one way or another, the money ought to come in to fix it. Now, for instance, we're having a little argument right out. I happen to live in Oroville, and what's known as Cadillac.
No wonder you've got $1,000. I didn't want to give it to us without the rest of that stuff.
My father that's got a Lincoln, he's outdoes all the rest of us. He's got a Lincoln. I see. He's got this thing really gussied up. But anyway, we live. That's where Oroville ends, a block beyond my house. And I'll have to tell you the message just beyond. Just beyond. We're not too good enough, or I wouldn't be able to afford to live. Just to get the balance. Then there's a rich man sits right in the middle of our particular area, and he won't allow the streets to be paved, right, unless somebody can just afford to enough to work around him to make him pay for his share. He owns too much property, while the rest of us can buffer. I cannot have a street, a sidewalk, and a gutter in front of my house because he doesn't want done. And he's got the property to save again. Until someone is wise enough to know that you go and you work around it little by little and get him in a position where he has to pay. Can't be done. So he goes, now you know, you didn't need to get off because I was going inside. I'm all for it.
I shot my one.
I'll be quiet now too then.
I'll give the elder call later.
What we're saying is that the church should be pioneering, and then spread it to the community.
I think it would have pioneered by now, but...
Yeah, but I mean, this is the role of the church.
Of course.
I'm wondering, though, if many of us, you know, hearing all of this, wondering where to start. And I think... I recall that there was an Alcoholics Anonymous group that came to my church once and asked for a place. That's something that probably most of us would find we could start something.
Well, certainly it is. And because there are alcoholics in every community, and that's one of the biggest problems.
And they do
problems.
Have a hard time finding a place for their activity, don't they?
Yes. And... you know, why is it that our society has more alcoholics? You know, I wonder what it is that, you know, drives people to drink.
I just like to contribute one word because I understand your question. You know, where do we start? But one thing that's meant so much to me in this church and community involvement is that, in a very personal sense. I've been a teacher for 6 years and I felt the frustrations of a classroom of some 35 youngsters that you never reach. There's no way to reach that many youngsters in one spot, also under it just isn't possible. Because what you tell them, and if you do convey any values at all, the world moment, and possibly, you know, I mean, it's just really a frustration. I guess you probably know what I'm talking about, but at the temple, youngsters come in after school, and I'm able to involve myself with them in their lives. I can talk to them, work with them, be with them, share with them in a sense I could never do in a classroom. And it's also a learning process, of course, too. I've seen youngsters who were classified retarded
yeah.
Be be tutored, myself personally involved, and have them excel in their classes with that kind of backup. And the thing that keeps coming to my mind is how, you know, what does this mean to me? The kind of thing that it says in the Bible, you know, seek first the kingdom and all these things shall be added unto you. And I think that's true for me in a very real sense, because when I know I have friends who are involved in assertiveness training, for instance, and I know that's very real and that's very important. But somehow that's just happened to me. It wasn't something I conscientiously went after to learn how to assert myself. Somehow being involved in programs like this that mean so much, these things happen. You know? Or my sense of evangelism or whatever. To me, it's not separate. I don't evangelize 2 days a week. It's part of me, and it's a new way of looking at life, and I feel a very deep meaning and sense of me in my Christian upbringing, which I of course bring to this. So I just thought I'd contribute that, because I do know that when you're talking about programs, it's easy to talk about something that seems abstract, but it is a very deep personal fulfillment.
Right. Thank you.
And certainly, I mean, there's need all around us, everywhere we look. And what a church could do that decided it wanted to become involved is to gather those who want to be part of that process into a meeting and come up with suggestions on priority needs, you know, the greatest needs they see around them in their community and in their own church. Because, of course, church has first the responsibility to take care of the household of the faith. And if every church would at least attempt to do this, then we would take a great burden off of the government. This is really the answer to the welfare state, is the churches. If they would just try to take care of the needs of their own household of the faith, then that burden would come off government bureaucracy, and that government would be free to deal with other priorities. And it would be a stronger government, and also a greater deterrent to threats to the system. But I think needs first have to be identified, and then if it's a democratic process, as ours is, we vote on, you know, which is the greatest need, the greatest priority, and then determine what sort of resources you have to meet that need, and then begin to set up a structure to deal with it. But we find that the more people are involved, the better. I mean, the more ideas. We do things democratically where the whole congregation is involved in major decisions. And we've had cases where almost everybody in the church would feel one way about a certain issue, but there would be one person or two persons dissenting and expressing their opinion. They have that right. Sometimes it's a little child. And that has, in the past, turned the whole congregation around, because they had the information that was lacking. There's some knowledge there that no one else had, and that changed the decision. So I think things must be done. Decisions shouldn't be made by a pastor, an elder, a board member, any particular board member. I think the more involvement, the better. But I would like to hear from more people here if they have programs in their church to share them, or if anyone has questions on what they've heard so far.
I'm curious, you know, you said you get part-time, you thought you were going to be unable to feed the people that mm-hmm, were. Mm-hmm. Could you tell us about some of the sources from which you do
well,
the seafood?
Our people, our committee go to, they just started going everywhere they could think of. Wholesale outlets, co-ops, people, Safeway, right, people that supply your big supermarkets. And the thing that is happening, food is being thrown away. Mm-hmm. It's being wasted that anybody could get if they just show themselves to be, you know, legitimate, have a legitimate need. You can get it. And it's a crime when 2 out of 3 babies are going to be hungry in the world, that we're wasting food. We have a picture up in our dining hall that shows a woman who is starving, her breasts are deflated, and her child is trying to get nourishment from her. And the child is obviously starving, the stomach is distended, and it's amazing how the plates are clean at the end of the meal. When you look at that, I mean, you don't want to waste food when you know that there are people like that who, they didn't do anything to bring themselves into that situation. They were born into it, and there are millions of them. And, you know, how can we justify wasting food? We don't put it up there to make people feel guilty, but I'm not so sure they shouldn't feel guilt. It may not be their responsibility or their fault that that person is hungry, but it seemed to me that, you know, how could we not? If we care about people and, you know, we claim to love as Jesus taught, then, you know, that love should reach out to everyone, including those who are hungry. So when we take a bite of food and know that there are so many who cannot, then I think a person who has any conscience would feel some guilt and want to do something about such conditions in their own small way, whatever way that might be. I think that's the duty. It's our duty to do so.
How many of our churches take care of all their seniors, are responsible for all their seniors, are responsible for all their youth, are responsible for all their community children in the congregation?
I think relatively few compared to all the churches that there are. Where else do they have to turn to their churches?
Because I work with volunteer services in Watsonville. We get all these calls for help, for transportation, all. Every one of them belongs to some church. Every one of these seniors that call and say, could have somebody take me to the doctor, or whatever it is. So I just feel if all the churches were taking their responsibility for their own congregations, it would be a big help to me.
So many seniors that they're shut in their own apartments, that, you know, they're afraid to leave because, you know, they'll go to the bank to cash their check, and they get robbed. Mm-hmm. And right after.
This brings to mind one thing that we always do, which our pastor has always, from the start, ever since I've been at People's Temple, I can remember the first few, maybe 10, 15 minutes of service. Of course, we have longer services than 1 hour. And maybe you have to be willing to spend more than 1 hour in church on Sunday morning, for instance. But we always make sure that every senior has a ride home before church starts. And also, if there's anyone who has a doctor's appointment during the week, that a ride is arranged. And these things become elements of the service. But again, you have to have a certain tolerance for a little more give and take. And that can't just start chomping at the bit at 11 o'clock and service is out. You know, there might be someone's need yet on that. But we always try to bring these things out and do it when we can. Yeah, it is, but it sure means a lot when you know you can count on it.
Well, I say
a lot of times it's just a matter of communication. Sure. People will be willing to go, they just don't know.
And, you know, there's a fear in this society going out for, like, evening services or evening meetings because there's a violence on buses, the bus systems. But if people have the assurance that, you know, they will be, they have transportation, I think, you know, they would be more involved. They want to, yeah, nobody wants to stay indoors all day, but the crime is getting so bad, and the blame is being placed in all the wrong places. The police want to create more law enforcement, more policemen, and come down with more force. That's not going to stop the crime rate. It's environmental conditions that cause the crime rate to go up. People don't do things in a vacuum. They do it because there's need and there's deprivation. And we had an FBI agent come to our church, and he met with some of us before he spoke. And he talked about crime, and he said how every person has the seed of sin within them. And we stopped him right there. We said, this isn't true. We know from our own experience that it's not crime isn't something that's born within a person. It's something that's created. It's something that's learned. It's something that comes out of necessity. People aren't born, you know, good and bad. They develop that way. to say otherwise is to be to say they're inferior, that God created people inferior to some on different levels. But that's not what our Bible tells us.
You see babies in a nursery in the hospital and they all look like little angels.
Yeah.
Downstairs, I couldn't hear the question. Will you kind of recap it?
Yes, I will. He was saying, how do you get people involved in the church? That, you know, they're busy. The ones who want to get involved are most often the ones that are already involved in other things. They have their jobs. They may have other community involvements. And, you know, they're not around. You know, they're doing other things during the normal hours. And in the case of our church, there's very few who, like me, work full-time. I'm only one of several. What we draw on is people who come in when they can. But, you know, we try to get a schedule. You know, when they're able to devote so much time, we try to pin down a time that we can count on them that they'll be in. You know, they'll come into the church. And these are ongoing programs, you know, that different ones might help with, whether it's daycare or, you know, the seniors programs or, you know, overseeing tutoring or any number of programs. We people come in and you have to try and get a schedule, you know, when you know you can count on people. And if it's not during, you know, your normal business day or day hours, you know, it would have, you know, certain things like being dealt with in the early evening hours. You mentioned a justice committee, or criminal justice. That would determine the types of programs you can get involved in. Some programs you can't do at night, I'm sure.
I think that's the very point where whatever services we've been able to render in the community have been right at the point we just last mentioned, and that is there has to be someone who will coordinate the activity. Now, we apparently have a different pattern than People's Temple in San Francisco. We're 100 members and they're 9,000. Okay. One of the things we look for is not the roots. That is, we're not looking for roots, but for fruits. And I think if we keep that in mind, this is how a small congregation can impact the community which it's a part of. We don't require of the head of the AA that he be a member of our church. as long as the kinds of things he's involved in are helping people, then to us, at least to my mind, he is an instrument of God's love. And if that is the kind of, you know, if that's the kind of criteria that we have, then we don't have to worry about sectarian, we don't have a background, we don't have to worry about color of skin, we don't have to worry about anything, but is this an agent of God's love in helping people? And if we have that one guy, or gal, or couple, or small group, you know, and they're responsible, then we, the church board, through a committee, works it out with those people about what the arrangements are. And when they came and said, you know, we'd like to use the building. On Sunday morning, I said, does anybody object to AA using the building? And no objections, and so I invited them in, and they've been there ever since. Now, another time, a group came and said, we'd like to use the building. We are a religious organization. We'd like to share your facility. So we set up a committee. The committee made a recommendation to the board. The board was hesitant. They sent it to the congregation. The congregation voted it down. Not everything is minimal. My feeling was that this was a responsible group of people, or else I would have not opened the door to the degree that I did. The congregation is the ultimate decider. But we have a kind of either a tacit agreement or a signed contract that we are the Sacramento Learning Center is a school from grades 1 through 8 that make use of our educational building. They're an incorporated group. The head of their board is a PhD teacher at Sacramento State College. They're a responsible organization. They pay their bills regularly. They have goals that are similar to the nurturing function of the church. And, you know, we went through the process and they're with us. The church could not carry on that school. 100 members can't do it. They can barely keep the doors of the church open, keep the bills paid, et cetera, et cetera. But because there's an openness to where strength and leadership and caring of people is there, and we recognize that quality, then we don't have to worry. We do not worry about the identity. Mm-hmm. Or I shouldn't say some of us do. Some people in the congregation do worry about identity over against fruits. And, you know, that's a human kind of thing. Who are we and what are we doing? And that's a part of the continuing debate is the joy and the agony of being a democratically governed congregation.
Well, I think that's a very important thing that, you know, not all congregations are going to be able to involve themselves in ways that they would like due to, you know, their members' schedules and their numbers of members. But, you know, they can do what Tom's church has done, certainly, and that's become facilitators of programs that reach out. And that would involve people who don't even go to the church. Allowing some outside group to use a facility and having, you know, whatever members can get involved with that outside group. But the point is, I think we're addressing ourselves to, is that the church must, and in these times, should, you know, reach out in some way, whether it be with its own members or with others or with both, you know, in whatever way it can. That's the whole the main duty.
Well, I was going to say our church in San Jose has cooperated with 5 downtown churches in this area. It's gone down. And we have fires that's been up for 3 or 4 years in our urban ministry, which works with the people. And we support mainly, by money, but people can do when they can't get the time. And our work is mostly with people who have White House and Continentalists. And then the same downtown churches have a United Food Organization, which feeds people on the street who can't. And they get the food from Savers. And the churches, at least brought these 5 downtown churches together very well. We have a splendid young man who has worked with this church, Paul Christie, who is working with.
That's tremendous. By the way, I didn't finish with the story about the FBI man. after we challenged him on his idea that everybody has the seed of sin or crime within them, we took him through our program. We had him talk with some of our ex-convicts and others that we've rehabilitated. And when he ended up giving his talk, he talked about how the environment affects our lives. I mean, using virtually the same words that we had expressed to him, which is, it's a change. He was changed very quickly. And I don't know how, what kind of, if he's in very good stead with his higher-ups at this point, but he certainly has a different view. But it's a view that he had never seen. He had just been, you know, educated out of some academic text that's prepared for him by others. We've never even seen, the seedier side of life, which is what, you know, we face every day. And that it was encouraging to see. And I'm glad that to hear, you know, at least there's an interest in criminal justice, because, you know, this area is, it's unbelievable what's happening. We have gotten last year hundreds out of jail, and some that were headed for jail, free, that would be in prison today simply because they could not afford an attorney. And it's fortunate for us that several members of our church are attorneys, and they all work on our legal staff. They devote the time they can. Some have practices, others, you know, are able to give more time because they're not in a firm. But they defend people who can't afford adequate legal representation. And so these hundreds that I'm talking about would have ended up in jail, and I would say close to 100% of them were innocent. I'm talking about innocent persons. My question is, how many more are in jail today, you know, all over the country, who are innocent?
Some mistaken identity.
And mistaken identity. A lot of mistaken identity cases. People point the finger at a black person. And because it's true, some of them think, well, you know, that person's black, they did it. And it's really terrible. Well, others were set up and harassed and framed. And, but, you know, there's something wrong with that kind of thing where, you know, the rich are able to buy their way to freedom. Patty Hearst is an example. Do you think if she wasn't known, she'd be out? She may do some time, but I think it'll only be to show that the system works and it doesn't favor the rich. But it does favor the rich, because money is what's behind the society. It is the root of all evil. I'm convinced of it. We see how it works every day. Watergate helps show it. And I agree with those who say Watergate was the tip of the iceberg. There are things going on. We had a person come to our temple to speak who was a mayor of Mississippi. She happened to be a black woman. She talked about her trip to China. She didn't speak about it in glowing terms. She just talked about it in terms of their meeting their own needs. And it is phenomenal that you can feed every person when you have a fourth or fifth of the world's population. I'd say that's an achievement. It may not work for us, but it's working for them, so she told about it. And she told about how there's virtually no crime. She saw it. She stayed there a long time. She went with the first delegation of women, which was also included Shirley MacLaine, the actress. And she came, she told us about it. And outside of our building were two men with a briefcase. And when our people who greet guests went out to approach them, they ran for their car. Well, we ran after them. We wanted to see what they're up to. And as they drove off, we got their license plate. Fortunately, we have some people in our church that have various contacts and were investigators in newspaper work. And they traced these guys to the state where she came from. They came from an Air Force base, Kessler Air Force Base. And they work under Senator Stennis, who has his own CIA-type operation, if you can believe it. It's true. But when we tried to expose it, nobody wanted to handle it. It was too hot to handle. but it's true because we had their license, we had their names, their signatures, their car rental agency. They came in a rented car. And when we wrote Congress, Stennis sent back, answered the congressman in contact and said they were not in in California on that date, which is a lie. So who knows all the things that are going on in this country. But why was that woman a threat?
Yeah, what was
the
threat to do?
Well, I guess they didn't like the talking about another country. And they didn't like the fact that a black woman had become a mayor. And particularly in Mississippi.
I'm going to get in here a little closer so I could participate a little more and hear everything that was going on. And before you finish, I want to make another suggestion of things we might do.
Go right ahead.
I don't want to break in on this chain of thought that you have right here.
I was finished. Go ahead.
I'm just delighted to hear some of the things that are being brought out here tonight. And I know of Tom's church and its leadership in the south part of Sacramento very well. There are five Christian Disciples churches in Sacramento, and I'm a member of the Arden Church, and I'm very, very happy about the things that people in Flint Ridge are doing that Tom told about tonight, because I think it's really the church in action to a very great extent. And what you just said about having this black woman come and talk is intriguing, too. There are some things that we can do in the area of criminal justice, and I wanted to mention one or two of them. I'm a member of our criminal justice task force,
yeah.
And we have two resolutions before the group tomorrow afternoon business meeting, resolutions B and C, which I hope you will get a hold of before tomorrow afternoon and read them carefully and study them and be prepared maybe tonight sitting in on either one or the other at 9 o'clock to ask questions about them if you have them in your mind. But the thing I want to bring to your attention primarily in regard to what we can do to help people who are in trouble. There's an organization that's been organized in the last 6 or 8 years throughout Northern California. It has 16 or 18 branches called Friends Outside. Some of you have heard about it?
We have one
of our churches. Well, excellent. And we have a Friends Outside organization in Sacramento, and they're getting support from a number of different churches, not only Disciples churches. Their primary purpose is to be friends outside to the relatives of people who are in prison or jail, to help particularly mothers and their little children where the fathers are in jail, or help fathers with children where the mother's in jail, but of course it's usually the other way around. There are lots of things that Friends Outside can do for the relatives of people. Transportation to visit them, for one thing. So many people who are in jail are very poor, and their relatives on the outside don't have a car that'll run as far as Vacaville or Folsom or some of the other prisons around Sacramento. So just dozens of trips are made every month to take people to visit their relatives who are in jail on visiting day. Our Sacramento chapter, for instance, it runs a nursery down at the Sacramento County Jail about 20 miles south of town every Sunday morning and Sunday afternoon to take care of the little children of young mothers who want to have a little private visiting with their husbands who are there in the county jail serving time. And the little children are too young and squirmy to really be in on the visit and don't understand it anyway too well. After the first few minutes, they want to do something else, so we run this little nursery for them down there. This is something we can do. They operate a clothes closet for people, for the people who need it, the relatives of people who are in prison, and a food closet. One of the things that, Tom, that I don't know whether you're doing, but I thought you were doing, was providing a meeting place for the Mothers Club, Mothers of Prisoners in Sacramento County Jail. Are you doing that?
No, we're not.
Well, there's been a need for it, and recently a room has been provided up in the center of town for these mothers to have their Mothers Club meetings in, and they meet twice a month and have a little potluck dinner and so forth and kind of build each other up a little bit. Beth Jones and I here are equally interested in and getting Iron Church people to be aware of some of the ways that they can be involved in the Friends Outside program in Sacramento. But if you're in a community where there isn't a Friends Outside organization, I would hope that you would find out about the organization and see if you can't get your church people, some of them, to volunteer to be helpers in the Friends Outside movement. Maybe centering it right in your own church if there's not one in this community already. And I wanted to mention that particularly while we're talking about some of the things that might be done. I'm so hopeful that personally that we can get our people in our churches to take more of an interest in adult people who are in trouble. Now, it's pretty easy to get people to take an interest in children who are in trouble, and to go to the juvenile hall and to raise money for parties for them and birthday cakes and so forth. But it's awfully hard to get our people interested in the families of adults who are in prison, and particularly the adults themselves who are in prison. Our church, for instance, has a little project of gathering soft cover books and magazines that they've already used and otherwise would throw away, and they bring them to the church office every Sunday, and one of us takes them down to the central city jail every Monday morning for reading material. There are 450 men down there in the central jail, and there's no regular reading material provided for. And we take down the whole big box or two of magazines every Monday morning to them. They're distributed by the recreation officer. There are a lot of little things like that that can be done, but they're particularly in the field of trying to help the relatives of people.